The Rad Podcast is brought to you by MOFO, male optimization formula with organs to boost testosterone. Brad's Macadamia Masterpiece, mind-blowing nut butter blend, now offered on Amazon. Chili Technology, temperature-controlled mattress systems for a good night's sleep. InsideTracker.com, offering blood, DNA, and fitness tracking data all in one place. And Organifi, whole food organic superfood supplements and drink blends. And please visit the shopping page at bradkearns.com for my personal selection of favorite products for health, fitness, and peak performance with great discounts for listeners. Here we go with the show.
What happens when you have too much belly fat and you're too inflamed is that this enzyme aromatase is produced in excess, and any testosterone that you do make or receive by outside means gets converted into estrogen. Females can easily fall out of balance in hectic, high-stress modern life because they're asked to perform this more varied role than their traditional biological drive to be the nurturer caretaker. So when they're out there in the testosterone-dominant workplace, depleting estrogen and being forced to compete and do things that are against their main biological drives of nurture caretaker, they can become estrogen depleted, and that orgasm will help bring them back into hormone balance. If you try this Taoist practice of withholding orgasm and you finish the sexual act without orgasm, the libido and the testosterone will recirculate in your body and skyrocket to higher levels.
Modern day mofos, what is up? Let's talk about testosterone, libido, and sexual health. Maybe this show sounds like it's directed to the male listener in particular, but guess what, females? We got a lot of stuff to talk about that might be interesting to you too, especially if you want to translate and share with your partner. And I'm just going to hit these interesting insights that I've been picking apart, doing research for a book I'm writing, tentatively titled The Testosterone Mofo Mission. And it's all about optimizing your testosterone, delaying the aging process, being the best mofo that you can be, naturally with lifestyle-related focus, rather than most of the books out there I've discovered. Almost all of them have to do with how to engage in hormone replacement, testosterone replacement therapy the right way, and the arguments for and the necessary info there. But it seems like we have to put a premium on a comprehensive lifestyle approach to testosterone optimization before turning to medications. And of course, they can be very valuable and helpful as a last resort when you have all the lifestyle things clicking for the small percentage of the population that is clinically hypogonadal, which means that you're really not making enough testosterone. But for the most part, there's so many things you can do. And I guess this goes for other categories of prescription drugs as well, such as the routine dispensation of statins, sleep medication, and digestion relief that can so easily be corrected with lifestyle alterations in a short time. But unfortunately, we seem not to be going down that road as a society. We'd rather have that quick fix, that pill. And it's certainly tempting when it comes to male hormone and testosterone optimization, because the lack of male vitality can be a real bummer, reduced quality of life. And when you kind of get stuck in that pattern of low testosterone, you're going to have increased disease risk factors for all kinds of stuff, especially heart disease, because the heart is especially dependent upon proper levels of the androgenic hormones, testosterone, human growth hormone, things like that. So it's a bad deal and needs to be corrected. The first and foremost symptom of trouble is the spataea. That's right, the excess accumulation of visceral fat. This is the fat that's surrounding our organs located in the midsection. And it's distinguished from the other kind of fat, which we call subcutaneous fat, that deposits all over the body underneath the skin. The visceral fat is believed to be far more health destructive and has these inflammatory properties that beget the accumulation of more visceral fat. So if you add a little bit of belly fat, a little bit of spare tire, that's why fighting this battle is so critical. Once you add a little bit of belly fat, which of course happens as the decades pass, sort of by default, when we're engaged in modern lifestyle practices where the accumulated effects start to take hold, you have your six pack no matter what you eat or drink in college and in your 20s, and then things start to slide and slip a little bit. And when you start to add a little bit of this visceral fat, it's actually classified as an endocrine organ of its own. It's a separate organ in the body, because it secretes these inflammatory chemicals called cytokines. So belly fat is inflammatory and puts you in a state of chronic or systemic inflammation. And when you are in a state of chronic inflammation, this inhibits your testosterone production and causes all kinds of other problems with metabolic health, being able to burn body fat. So when you become inflamed and you suppress the male hormones and you compromise your ability to burn body fat, it steers you over toward the consumption of carbohydrate to become carbohydrate dependent because you're not a good fat burner. Even if you diligently try to restrict carbs in the diet and eat right, you're going to have these pressures, these forces that push you over into inflammatory, carbohydrate dependent, low testosterone lifestyle. And then it gets worse and worse and worse, and the belly fat accumulation begets more belly fat accumulation until we're so far down the road that even hormone therapy can't help. And what happens when you have too much belly fat and you're too inflamed is that this enzyme aromatase is produced in excess, and any testosterone that you do make or receive by outside means, exogenous testosterone, gets converted into estrogen, thanks to your spare tire. So that aromatization is a bad deal, and it's something that might be relevant to a lot of people who are turning to hormone therapy to kind of right the ship. But I don't want to make blanket statements, because if you're low on motivation, focus, and energy, and you get a little boost, which usually happens when you do hormone replacement therapy, maybe you can leverage that to get back in shape, do some more workouts, get rid of some of that belly fat, and then losing the abdominal fat. Oh my gosh, there's nothing better to right all kinds of health aspects and disease risk factors in the blood, but especially reducing that chronic inflammation allows your hormones to come back into balance and you start making more testosterone and utilizing it more. So this is the belly fat battle, the key battle of lifetime, either accelerated aging or delaying the aging process and becoming one of those specimens that you dream about, that six-pack old surfer dude at the beach who seems like he's as strong and healthy as the young bucks in the lineup and he can catch any wave he want and then go home and eat a burrito and do some more push-ups. Okay, so the research is interesting, and I'll just cut into some of the things that might be of interest. One of them is the relationship between libido and testosterone. Strikingly, surprisingly, they do not have a direct relationship that we always assume. But first, I want to talk about the relationship between libido and heavy exercise, heavy training, because a lot of us associate working really hard, heavy physical output, with a decline in libido. It's the excuse of all times, but the research shows that libido is not an arousal, and orgasm are all parasympathetic functions. Whereas athletics, heavy training, hard physical labor, these are sympathetic nervous system functions. So it's the fight or flight stimulation that you need when you're going and throwing weights around or completing a CrossFit workout or working hard to build a sauna in your backyard and working those muscles and hoisting heavy things all day long. Now, when you're talking about libido, arousal, orgasm, parasympathetic is the rest and digest branch of the sympathetic nervous system. So it requires relaxation. And theoretically, we should be able to go out there after a big, busy athletic day and hit the sheets for more action later in that evening, be the train all day, party all night type of icon there. So the key is to transition out of that sympathetic state into that relaxed parasympathetic state. Maybe you've experienced the ability to do that at certain times, such as receiving a massage or going for temperature therapy, whether it's a sauna or a jacuzzi, and something that triggers you into relaxation mode. Maybe it's an app where you're engaged in meditation or breathing exercises, but it's a wonderful skill to hone, and it has a direct association with your ability to perform sexually. So don't use that excuse anymore and just put a focus on coming down off of a sympathetic dominant daily disposition into parasympathetic. Teach yourself how to relax, and then you will optimize your sexual health. Here's a great tip from Dr. Janine Krause. She has a podcast I was a guest on called The Health Fix. And she recommends when you get home or have a chance to unwind after an intense workout, lie down on the ground with your feet elevated for 5 to 10 minutes and engage in some deep diaphragmatic breathing, some relaxation breathing exercises. And this will help you come down off of that sympathetic dominant workout to activate parasympathetic function. Another great way to do this is foam rolling. So give yourself a nice foam rolling session at the end of a busy, hectic, stressful day, and you will get quickly into parasympathetic stimulation due to the pain-killing endorphins that are released as you roll through the tight spots and actually give yourself a little bit of discomfort. Same with a nap. Oh my gosh, especially when I was an athlete, but in everyday life, I'm very fond of naps. Sometimes they last as short as 10 or 15 or 20 minutes, but you can do a lot of great benefit with a very short nap just by training yourself to completely unplug, unwind in a deliberate approach, deliberate manner, where you're just shutting that brain down. I like to turn on my rainfall app on my phone. And as soon as those raindrops come about and I put a blindfold over my face, I have trained over the years to just shut that brain function off and relax. And of course, I can easily fall asleep at this point. A lot of people tell me, I can't fall asleep. I try to take a nap. Doesn't matter. Just lay there and relax and teach your brain to go down from this constant stimulation and hyperconnectivity that makes it very, very difficult for us to unwind into parasympathetic function and be able to perform sexually after the busy, stressful day. All right. Interesting take on that and a new twist, right? So I don't care how many miles you rode, how long your butt was sitting on that seat, your prostate was pushing on the front of the seat. Well, maybe that is something that could throw you off. But in terms of a heavy, stressful, hard-working day, you can go to the other side nice and easy if you know how to unwind. Speaking of sexual frequency and optimizing your frequency, you might have heard of the Taoist theory. It's been popularized in many books and nowadays with podcast hosts and people who are into that exploring sexuality and the tantric and things. And the old time Taoist theory, thousands of years old, they believe that orgasm is a release of your essential life force, and that you might want to preserve the number of orgasms you have in your life in order to regenerate energy in your body. So the Taoist idea is to have sex frequently and build up those hormones, which absolutely spike when you're anticipating sexual activity or engaged in sexual activity. But then it's known, this is science now, so we're taking Taoism and we're blending it with modern science. It's known that the anticipation and the act of intercourse is building up your testosterone like crazy. And then as soon as you ejaculate, you experience a big decline in testosterone, as well as libido, as well as energy, as well as cognitive focus, interest in what your partner's saying. You may have seen this in movies or experienced it yourself. Just want to go off and time to start the rebuilding process. And John Gray actually says that's okay, that the man needs to retreat to his cave to replenish his testosterone after testosterone depleting activities, including the culmination of sex. So if you're thinking of the Taoism as being too far out there, now we have modern science and blood samples and tests and things like that. that validate this. And of course, you can confirm this in real life. The difference in your mindset and your energy level before and during sex, and then after ejaculation. So the Taoists want you to have sex frequently, build up those hormones, but then preserve your ejaculation and have a sexual experience where you don't ejaculate. And the super experts in the field are able to train themselves to experience an orgasm without ejaculating, and multiple orgasmic, just like the females. Yes, it takes years of practice and work and discipline. You can read more details in this very interesting book that I read like 20 years ago called The Tao of Health, Sex, and Longevity. Tao spelled T-A-O, thank you very much. Also, Ben Greenfield's new book, Boundless, has a really nice overview of a lot of the Taoist theories and also the blending of modern science. Interestingly, for females, guess what the Taoists say? They believe that frequent orgasm, unlimited orgasm, is excellent for nurturing your female essence, your female energy, becoming healthier. So it's the absolute opposite of the male, where they characterize an orgasm as a miniature death, and then you only have so many miniature deaths over your lifetime, and then you actually do die. And they describe it, there's three energy sources. They call it qi, shen, and jing. And qi is your daily energy level. So your qi is down if you're tired, your qi is up if you're excited and energized. Your shen is your radiant energy that you radiate to the outside world. And then your jing is your male essence. That's your stored energy, your battery power. And so the Taoists believe that you have this jing that starts with a full battery when you're born, and then you steadily, slowly and surely deplete your jing over your lifetime. And so when you have days and days of depleting your qi from high stress experiences, dysfunctional relationship dynamics, overtraining, overly stressful, you're going to deplete that jing at a faster rate. And then you're going to have, less radiant shen for the world because your qi is low and your jing is getting depleted at an accelerated rate. There's your quick lesson in Taoism. Females, no, different story. You're orgasming frequently, and each time you're nurturing your female essence, building the energy more and more. And they take this concept a long way down the road. If you, the references to the ancient works that are published in the Tao of Health, Sex, and Longevity are mind blowing. Even back then, thousands of years ago, they believed that a female welcoming multiple partners and experiencing a great variation of semen would make her ascend to the highest levels of health and energy and be sort of the queen bee of the society. Wild times. And it's definitely wild because all we have is our cultural belief systems and values that have been cultivated carefully in modern times by the powers that be. I did a great show with Chris Kelly where he was talking about the modern weird society that stands for Westernized, educated, industrialized, rich, and democratic, and how our values were strongly orchestrated hundreds of years ago by the Catholic Church for their own self-interest, things like supporting and encouraging the nuclear family. And so the idea of optimized female health from thousands of years ago, the Taoists wanting the female to have multiple sexual partners, has been snuffed out. But it's interesting to just reflect upon that and think that, perhaps they had a point from biochemical sense and maybe from other directions too. And we're kind of experiencing cultural growth and progress these days. My shows with Wendy Walsh confirm that, where she talks about how modern relationships have no rules anymore. So the female is allowed to take her thumb and swipe and swipe and swipe and look for multiple sexual partners and be picky and choosy and toss them out in the morning instead of the other way around. And so you could argue that all this represents some form of progress because we have more free choice and more open-mindedness to live the lifestyles that we desire rather than being beholden to religious doctrine, as Chris Kelly argues very persuasively. Whew, heavy stuff. Okay, bringing back in some modern medical science with my favorite go-to science expert, Dr. Kate Shanahan. And she argues that this Taoist idea could be taken a little bit too far, and it might be the modern version of the guy's excuse that he has a headache. Although I don't know too many guys who are floating that excuse around frequently. I know that's often been positioned on the female, that the female has a headache, she's not interested, the guy's more interested in the female, but who knows? Trying to preserve that male essence could be the way to extricate yourself if you're not feeling it. Anyway, Dr. K explains, again, getting into the science and the biology, it actually takes around 72 hours for sperm and seminal fluid to regenerate after an orgasm. A younger specimen who has the ability to go every single day has more prostatic fluid and is better able to empty that bag with a short recovery period, more so than folks in the older age groups. It takes longer and longer to regenerate as we age. As a little side note and a little plug, commercial plug here, this is where MOFO, the male optimization formula with organs, can be really valuable because it contains the exact proteins, peptides, enzymes, cofactors, and molecular biodirectors that trigger testosterone and sperm production, right? You're consuming the same organs in the animal, and so you have the same nutrients. And again, this is also validated by science. Dr. Kate explains this really nicely, where she says, believe it what you want. If you're not believing in this like supports like ancestral theory, where we've had thousands of years of support for the idea that nourishing someone who has a weak heart by consuming animal heart or kidneys, if they have weak kidneys, has been known to work and be a central element of ancestral health for thousands of years. But if you're not feeling that, you can acknowledge that when you consume, for example, freeze-dried testicles from a grass-fed cow, you're getting the exact nutrient profile. You're getting that high load of zinc and the other specific nutrients that are essential for human testosterone production. So, boy, and we also have a lot of user experience to validate that this stuff can give you a really natural boost. Quite different than consuming testosterone from exogenous, from outside sources, taking an injection or rubbing on a cream. So it definitely can't hurt, and it most certainly can help because you're getting such an awesome boost of the exact nutrients you need for male reproductive health. Okay, so back to the show. The essential need to honor the Taoist strategy for females to have frequent orgasm, John Gray supports this in modern times, saying that females can easily fall out of estrogen balance. They want to be estrogen dominant to be all the female that you can be, just like the male wants to be testosterone optimized. So females can easily fall out of balance in hectic, high-stress modern life because they're asked to perform this more varied role than their traditional biological drive to be the nurturer caretaker. So when they're out there in the testosterone dominant workplace, depleting estrogen and being forced to compete and do things that are against their main biological drives of nurture caretaker, they can become estrogen depleted, and that orgasm will help bring them back into hormone balance. Oh, right. Great stuff. What a great excuse, right? If you're angling for that. Okay. So understanding that testosterone skyrockets with the anticipation of having sex and engaging in the act of sex, but then plummets as soon as you orgasm and takes a while to rebuild. Here's the thing. If you try this Taoist practice of withholding orgasm while you're, and you finish the sexual act without orgasm, the libido and the testosterone will recirculate in your body and skyrocket to higher levels. You will desire your partner like never before. If you haven't tried it at least once in life, might be a fun thing to do. You will have a prolonged desire for your partner that you can't stand until the next sexual experience and opportunity. Maybe you'll only make it once. Oh my gosh, the Taoists are wanting you to withhold on a high frequency that gets higher and higher the older you get. So they want to have less orgasms in each age group. And we're going to talk about those numbers shortly. And the general sense here among modern males that I've discussed this with is that this is a pretty huge sacrifice to withhold orgasm. It's a huge challenge, and there doesn't seem to be a ton of interest by the average modern male. This is one reason is because it may be more difficult to arrange for frequent optimal sexual experiences at the drop of a hat or the snap of the fingers, right? You don't know when that next chance will come, so you don't want to waste it and walk away with a full bag. Ben Greenfield, the biohacking king who was willing to try anything and everything, even he describes his reluctance to go deep into this Taoist practice of withholding because he says he wants to enjoy that time with his wife to the maximum and that release from the stresses of modern life and all the things that are going on when they do have that chance to get together, when a couple has a chance to get together, a busy couple, especially a couple that has the 24/7 obligation of raising kids and having other people in the home and less frequent opportunities. So certainly okay to discount that idea, but you know, keep it in mind and maybe try it out once in a while, especially if you know when your next sexual opportunity is coming for sure, such as a vacation time or something. I also like David Dida's insights here. He's the author of Way of the Superior Man, and his insights are very controversial. A lot of people just reject it outright because it's pretty spicy, but I just want to share with you what he says. He likes this idea of the male withholding orgasm and even contends that males should resist, should override their partner's encouragement for them to ejaculate and have maximum enjoyment of the sexual experience, right? The deep biological drive to reproduce, to become pregnant, the female's oftentimes rooting you on. And David Dida wants you to override that. And this will show your female partner that you are in control and that you're strong and resilient. Dida contends that deep down, the female really does want the man to override her encouragement, and then he'll be seen as the one who is the master of all his urges, and that deep down gives the female this tremendous sense of comfort and security that her man is the strongest, most disciplined, most resilient dude around. Wow, pretty trippy and highly controversial. And he also, relatedly, if you want to get into some of his controversial insights, he also contends that when the female is going off, you're having an argument and she's expressing all of her anger and emotions, what you're supposed to do at that point is to grab her and hold her in an embrace and express your love, realizing that it's not personal and override this initial emotional exchange. And realize also that when a female is really letting you have it and really pushing your buttons and really going for your weak spot, this is all happening subconsciously because she's probing to determine how much that you really do love her. And so when you rush up and give her a hug and tell her you love her while she's giving you the riot act, that is when the male-female bond rises to the higher level. Yeah, pretty wild. Told you it's controversial, but you can take what you want from that. Very, very interesting commentary, if nothing else. Okay, back to frequency. So the Taoist practice recommends the different optimal rates for different age groups. If you're 20s and 30s, I think there's an unlimited hall pass there. Once you get into your decades of your 40s, the Taoist suggestion is a maximum orgasm frequency of 2 to 3 times a week. In your 50s, the once to twice a week maximum is the recommendation. And then when you're over 60, it's once a week maximum. They also say that it's okay to have a little more frequency in the summer and then possibly, especially in the older age groups, drop down to 0 orgasms during the winter months because that's when it's easier to deplete your male essence. Okay, trippy ancient Taoist commentary. Think what you want, but check this out. We're bringing in the science again, and there's some very interesting modern research from Japan that a frequency of 1 orgasm per every 7 days, once a week, is the sweet spot to optimize testosterone production. If you engage more frequently than that, you will experience transient reductions in your testosterone, as we know, and especially an immediate drop as soon as you orgasm. Interesting also is if your ejaculation is less frequent than once a week, your testosterone will also experience a decline following the use it or lose it principle. So if you lose interest in one of the main functions of testosterone is to promote libido and sexual health, you'll downregulate these things and turn your attention to whatever else you're doing if you're not having sex or ejaculating once a week. Okay, so how about the takeaways from all this commentary? I think the big one here is that you are obligated for your sexual health and testosterone optimization to ejaculate at least once every 7 days, but maybe put more of your attention as a couple, more of your focus on female frequency. And if you're really in a great groove with a passionate relationship, frequent opportunities, no roadblocks, maybe you can experiment with ejaculation control once in a while and see what you think. And speaking of the difference between ejaculating on your own and with a partner, John Gray makes a very interesting and persuasive argument here about the concerns with the popularity of modern day easy access internet pornography that serves to hijack the dopamine pleasure pathways and trick your brain into thinking that you're having real sex to the extent that one can experience difficulties getting aroused in real life with a real woman in front of them. And also the easy access to porn and ejaculation will potentially cause the male to lose interest in the chase. The actual wooing of a live person to become your partner. And this is known to be a huge factor in the overall boosting, spiking of testosterone and overall testosterone optimization. So the mere anticipation of romance and conquest, maybe you don't like that word, but this is not talking just about sexually, but for conquering any peak performance challenge, for experiencing the ultimate payoff after the anticipation, these are the things that skyrocket testosterone. If it becomes free and easy and ever easy access, you become essentially a dopamine addict. And John Gray's particularly concerned about the combination of porn and video games, because then if you put these two things together, it meets all the male's primary biological drives without any effort necessary. Whew. All right. Thank you for taking all that into consideration. We've so far been mixing insights about testosterone and libido. And what's was shocking to me with the research is that testosterone is not directly correlated with libido. Healthy testosterone, of course, helps libido, but libido can easily be killed if your partner is bitching and nitpicking, right? Even if you have healthy testosterone, you can lose your libido in a snap. And on the flip side, someone with low testosterone caused by unhealthy lifestyle practice might not be prevented from having a healthy sex life. Maybe they can get to that parasympathetic function if they're a lazy ass and hanging around and not burning too much energy, getting fit, or even making good dietary choices, but they can perform when they're called upon. Okay, speaking of that dopamine rush that you get the easy way with consuming pornography, you also get this in a more meaningful way when you engage with an exciting new partner, when you're chasing and engaging with someone early on. Dr. John Gottman contends that the romantic spark, the wild chemistry of a new relationship can last for as long as 2 years. And then inevitably, it is due to regulate, and you're going to kind of have the smoke clear, and then be looking at forming a long-term, healthy, loving partnership. However, his great research at the Gottman Institute also shows that it's possible to maintain this romantic spark, this excitement, this dopamine rush with a long-term partner. And he has research from couples that have been in love and excited about each other for over 20 years. And it just takes a little bit of strategy and mindfulness about being the best you can be in relationship, and maybe orchestrating some logistics to keep the excitement and the newness and the freshness. And we'll talk more about that in a second. So the dopamine rush is out there for the taking, and it can be done in a healthy way as opposed to a porn addict or perhaps a person who's addicted to very short-term relationships and then constantly of the mindset of moving on to more excitement and more dopamine from someone new. So the dopamine rush is definitely easier and more automatic when you're in a short-term relationship than when you transition into this long-term partnership. Because what happens in the long-term partnership, a stable, healthy long-term partnership, is you get this increased production of oxytocin. That's the hormone that evokes bonding, stability, love, connection. And this also happens in a family setting where your testosterone is known to decline when you become a father and also in locked into a long-term relationship. Why? Because this is, again, going back to biology, you're not obligated to conquer your environment and flash your peacock feathers when you're immersed in a stable partnership. And these are the things that spike testosterone, is that competition, that social status hormone, as Ashley Merriman calls it. But again, we have the potential to keep the magic going and keep the excitement hormones flowing along with that oxytocin. So what do? Try to do things that extricate from familiarity, boredom, taking your partner for granted. And of course, starting point is the stability of healthy relationship dynamics and a stress-balanced lifestyle of your own. So you're coming to the relationship as a wholesome, healthy person. T and libido are not directly correlated, but it certainly doesn't hurt to have healthy testosterone, healthy physical fitness, low body fat, absence of that visceral fat, and then your body's able to function well should your libido become activated, aroused, right? So we got to get that life stress and balance and give yourself a fighting chance at being a good lover here with your partner. And interestingly, Mark Manson wrote a recent newsletter with a surprising insight. This came from informal polling amongst his readers of either healthy long-term couples or people that had been recently divorced. And he said among the divorcees, they mentioned communication as being the primary, most important attribute of a relationship. In other words, probably admitting ostensibly that communication broke down, which is why they were divorced, and that was the reason they point to and the attribute they tout. But among the long-term happy couples, he discovered that respect turned out to be more important than communication, noting the insight from the couples and from himself that communication is bound to break down at some point. You're not always going to communicate responsibly and lovingly and sensitively, but if you have this underlying respect, you're going to be able to work through those times where communication breaks down. Interesting insight. So right now, if you're sitting around with a smile on your face, maybe you want to take your sex life, your relationship to the next level. Of course, there's zillions of recommendations out there. I've heard people pay more emphasis on actually scheduling it these days, I guess because we're so overscheduled or so locked into our schedules that it's a nice idea to say, hey, Tuesday night is going to be our night. That's kind of interesting because the anticipation starts when you actually schedule it. You know it's going to happen. You're going to get lucky that night. And that's the initial spike of testosterone that we have scientifically validated. So vacations, of course, allow you to easily enter that parasympathetic state probably at the very start of the day after you slept in till 10, 15 a.m. or what have you, instead of locked into rat race mode. And hey, you know, you're allowed to even rent a hotel room in your own hometown. It's possible. Try it out. Get creative. Take the car over to the lookout where you first fooled around a long time ago. You can do some fantasy role-playing with a sense of humor injected into the experience instead of feeling this pressure to perform. And I think sense of humor, you can't say enough about that because people bring a lot to the table. Maybe you're not entirely aware of all the things that your partner brings to the table in a sexual setting. And it could be a high-pressure situation or a situation where direct and open communication is difficult or stunted due to whatever baggage and issues might be underneath the surface. So if you can have a sense of humor, and when things don't go perfectly, when your performance is not up to your level of expectation, you can laugh about it on the spot. That really is a nice way to break the tension and strengthen the connection. Same with fantasy role-playing. Mia Moore, we always pretend that she was my Spanish tutor from years ago, back in college days, and I'm working so hard in the classroom, and if I get my vocabulary words right, maybe we can take a break later. Hey, maybe we don't look like college students right now, but we can act like them, huh? Okay, the next category, moving quickly on, supplements. We'll talk a little bit about that. I'm sure you've been overwhelmed if you have any interest in the category of testosterone boosters. And what's interesting is that when you break it down and look at the research and look what's in the bottles, a lot of these products are actually targeting libido more so than testosterone. And there's not a ton of wonder supplements that have been scientifically validated to boost testosterone. There's research that can validate the marketing of the product and the marketing message that a study showed that this caused a minor boost in testosterone, which is great. And there's all kinds of supplements and herbs that are on the market that can stand by some research showing that they did a good job with minor boosts. But there's more research showing that many of these agents that you might have heard of can actually boost libido. Ginseng is probably one of the most familiar ones. Long Jack is another one. This has been a popular remedy for centuries as an aphrodisiac. Tribulus, fenugreek. You may have heard of some of these things or seen them bottled up with other cool stuff. Now, if you kind of attack this issue from the opposite direction, there's a lot of deficiencies that can really mess up your testosterone production. So let's say if you're deficient in zinc or magnesium or other important micronutrients, you can really compromise your ability to manufacture testosterone successfully. So the combination of zinc and magnesium has been a popular one. You might see it under the term ZMA, zinc and magnesium aspartate it stands for. And there's a great study of college football players where they had some big jumps in blood levels of testosterone with a protocol of 8 weeks of taking this supplement. So if you're down, if you're deficient, if your diet's not up to par and you go and hit some of the popular supplements, that can really do a nice boost. Vitamin D being another one, going out and get more sunlight can have a fantastic boost to your testosterone production, especially if you're deficient. So I didn't want to talk too much about supplements because it's a whole nother podcast. And I did my spiel for the organ supplements, but I kind of put this in a different category from all the testosterone or libido supplements, because this is really a food product, right? It's freeze-dried animal organs. There's nothing that's an extraction made in a laboratory or agents put together that don't exist in nature. And a lot of people who are into the ancestral health scene and the science of it, the synergistic function of ingredients that are found in nature. So when you're taking the animal organs in the exact form that they existed in the animal without breaking them down or extracting them, they're believed to have far more potency. And I think that's not too disputed of a statement, right? If you're taking a multivitamin when you can otherwise have a nutritious meal, most people would choose the nutritious meal. Most science would support the idea that you're better off getting your nutrients in that synergistic, natural form. And that's basically what the MOFO product is the completely unadulterated agents, proteins, peptides, enzymes, cofactors, and molecular biodirectors. All right. Finally, we could do another whole show on this, but I'll just mention it briefly as we close out this episode. The controversial topic of testosterone replacement therapy, TRT. Oh my gosh, the stats are just mind-blowing and stunning and highly disturbing. It is known in different places across the world, the study's been replicated, that there is a steady decline in the average testosterone level of the modern male to the tune of a decline of around 1% per year that started back in the 1980s. So dad and grandpa had more testosterone than you at the same age, right? We experience a natural decline as we age, but this is just generally across the board, age for age. There was more testosterone back in the day. And the belief is that this is driven strongly by the increased incidence of metabolic dysfunction, obesity, type 2 diabetes that we're seeing in modern times, as well as some environmental disturbances, the estrogenic compounds in the environment that can really harm your testosterone if you're sensitive and if you're giving yourself a lot of exposure, such as consuming food or drink that's encased in plastic. So the plastics give off these environmental estrogens, these xenoestrogens, and even a little bit can go a long way to messing up your testosterone production. Maybe you can Google the story of the frogs that changed sex. They experienced a sex change from male to female because they were swimming in waters polluted by environmental estrogens. Scary stuff. So you want to do your really best to avoid exposure to environmental estrogens, and you want to do your best to avoid putting on that spare tire, which will just crush your potential and your male essence in so many ways, along with other health consequences. Now, because this decline is so common, many people are turning to hormone replacement therapy at younger and younger ages. Did you know that 40% of all prescription drugs for erectile dysfunction are dispensed to males under age 40? So if you are turning toward the idea of hormone replacement therapy because you're not in top shape right now and experiencing symptoms of low testosterone, boy, the underlying lifestyle practices are going to be the first thing to focus on, because if you are not optimized with your lifestyle, you will not benefit from the hormone replacement therapy. At most, you'll experience a brief bump, and then you will regulate with all your inflammatory practices going on to aromatize that extra testosterone into estrogen, and you will grow what's affectionately called bitch tits. Right. You'll actually can develop this condition called gynecomastia, where you develop breast tissue because you're getting so much estrogen now because you're getting overdosed on testosterone. You don't know what to do with it because of your spare tire. And if you can tackle those lifestyle habits that I present in the MOFO mission, you can see it at the landing page on bradkearns.com to get a quick overview. And then the free ebook, Becoming a Modern Day MOFO, will get into more details about how to optimize these lifestyle habits. And of course, the book coming soon will give you the complete plan and all 10 assignments how to optimize every aspect of lifestyle for male hormone health. So if you're suffering from these symptoms, decline in motivation, poor workout performance and recovery, brain fog, of course, low libido, but we talked about how those aren't directly related, and you're not happy with your body composition, you're not responding to diet or exercise interventions, that's when you want to turn the corner here and try to get your male hormone function back in gear. And getting blood tests is an excellent idea. And I'll talk all about that, the different ones in the book. There's a lot of confusion and misunderstanding and misinterpretation of the values that are out there. So what I'm recommending is placing a strong emphasis on subjective measurements of testosterone health and using the blood tests as an adjunct to that because there's a lot of confusion. But when we're talking about serum testosterone, a lot of people say free testosterone is more valuable, but there's so many measurement errors and other concerns about free T that the experts that I follow want you to just focus on your total testosterone values in your blood. And the familiar scale ranges from 250 up to 1,000 or more. That's kind of the healthy range. And if you're under 300, a lot of people will classify you as hypogonadal, low T. You'll be a candidate for hormone replacement therapy. So you want to see that blood value at least up there in the middle of the game then. Again, because again, the norms and the averages today, we're talking about a pretty pathetic population of a large percentage overweight, obese, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, spare tire action. So you want to get up there in the 500 or 600 range and feel comfortable and then have all these attributes of good physical performance, concentration, motivation. So we're going to just tackle this thing from a big picture perspective. But you know, a good starting point, if you start taking MOFO and replenishing this depleted cellular energy, that might give you the motivation, that might give you the little boost that you need to get out there and adhere to an exercise program and therefore pay a little more attention to your sleep, because now you're in the exercise game, now you're making good decisions with your diet. So give yourself a little chance, give yourself a little boost, and take the first step, whether it's getting more sleep, getting some exercise, trying a bottle of MOFO. I think you'll be really happy with the results. and just turning the course before you go and look to testosterone replacement therapy. Now, if you've done everything, you're interested in fitness performance, and you want to consider all manner of optimization, I trust a lot of people that say this stuff can work if it's done right under good supervision. Mark Sisson has some good articles on marksdailyapple.com about his hormone replacement regimen, and now that he's in his late 60s and it's working for him. So I don't want to come off as discounting it outright. But when I look at the books and the offerings and the assumptions people make without looking at the lifestyle opportunities, boy, that's it seems like a big mistake, and it seems validated by science to say that. So there you go. Lots of stuff on the need to know. Ladies, I hope you hung in there and enjoyed it too. But get going, mofo. And thank you so much for listening. I'd love to help. Love to hear from you. Send your comments to podcast@bradventures.com and be rad. It's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece. Hey, this is going to be one of my favorite commercials because I get to introduce you to the delicious, nutritious, life-changing Brad's Macadamia Masterpiece. This is a mind-blowing nut butter blend that will soon ascend to your number one go-to snack, treat, or accoutrement for anything from dark chocolate, a cucumber celery smear, or mixed in with yogurt, oatmeal, cheesecake, or with a spoon right into your mouth, heading south. Let me tell you what I created in my kitchen through whirlwind experimentation and extreme sampling to my VIP product testing crew across the nation so far with 100% approval. In this beautiful jar, we have macadamia nuts, walnuts, cashews, the rare and precious coconut butter, coconut flakes, cacao nibs, real ancient sea salt, and organic MCT oil. Every single ingredient has been sourced to origin to be the very best we could find from around the world for the absolute highest purity and nutritional value. We run this product in small batches with a boutique family business in the Pacific Northwest, and everything is cold pressed to preserve nutritional value. So if you like eating healthy, it's a dream come true for all those who are keto, primal, paleo, and vegan, vegetarian too. I come in peace, my global healthy living friends. Masterpiece, that is. Try some now and it will change your life. I promise. If you don't like it, send it back to me. I'll eat it. You can order Brad's Macadamia Masterpiece on Amazon. Simple, simple. Or if you're bold, daring, and adventurous, buy three and get a bottle free at bradventures.com. Buy six and we'll send you 8. Christmas shopping early instead of late at bradventures.com. Check it out, Brad's Macadamia Masterpiece.